Welcome to the North Shore Vineyard Church audio podcast. I'm Crispin Schroeder. Today on the podcast, we have audio from our service on July 31st, and we're having a special guest speaker. First time at North Shore Vineyard Church, Phil Janson, who is the pastor of the Vineyard Church of New Orleans, our parent church that sent us out about a year and a half ago. So we're excited to have Phil with us to give the message today. And the title of today's message is, Who Are You? Phil is going to be talking on the subject of our identity, how that affects us in our spiritual walk. So let's head over to downtown Covington, North Shore Vineyard Church. Here, Phil Janson. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check us out on the web at northshorevineyard.org.
Long-term Saints fans here in the room today. Yeah. You know, we used to not admit that, but we love admitting it now, don't we? Yeah. I've enjoyed the last couple of seasons. I'm sure you have a lot more than I did for the previous, oh, say, 42 years. So what's the difference in the recent teams, the last couple of years, and all those other 40 years? Well, is it the coaches? Some would say yes. Is it the players? Some would say definitely. I'm going to suggest to you it's something bigger today. It's something bigger, something else. You see, the team we have these days, and by the way, aren't we making good moves in the right now, free agency? We never did that before. It's amazing. Anyway, so the difference is the team that we have now plays to win. They're aggressive on offense and on defense. The past teams, with only a couple of exceptions, never played to win. We played not to lose. And when you play not to lose, what happens? You lose. Yeah, and so that was our history. Well, we had no offense, and so we always tried to protect the ball. We were passive on defense, and we would give ground, and we'd always hope the other team would make a mistake, and when they did, we'd win a game. We were afraid to do anything. We wouldn't make any decisions, wouldn't take any chances, and indecisions was due to fear, and the fear was we don't really have what it takes to play to win. And so we just simply play not to lose. And then you have all those famous post-game interviews, and they were always focusing on things that we did wrong. Well, we didn't protect the ball. We didn't hold it. We didn't block. We didn't stop the big play. In other words, we did not play to lose very well. You never heard anything about what we could have done, what we should have been doing, or what we'll do differently. There was never any discussion about things not done or not tried. When the truth is, we should have played to win. We should have taken it to them and driven it down their throats, played smash-mouth football. We never did that. I'm glad that's the team we used to have, aren't you? It's not the team we have these days. So, when you think about playing not to lose, the issue, we would say, was fear. We're afraid we don't have what it takes to actually play to win. And so, but I want to suggest something is behind that fear. And that fear is a lack of identity. We really didn't know who we were. But at some point in the history of our city's team, somebody came along and settled the identity issue. Who are we? And then once that was settled, the question was, well, what do we want? We want a Super Bowl. Done. We did it, and we're probably going to do it again at some point. I really believe that. The identity issue got solved, and I think there's behind the fear of not having what it takes lies a real identity problem. Now, when it comes to our pursuit of God, I think we Christians sometimes are in the very same place. We feel like we don't really have what it takes to pursue God. We feel like we don't have what it takes to live a kingdom life. I mean, is not the kingdom life Jesus has given us and offered us, is it not quite a challenge? Yeah. And we often think that we just simply don't have what it takes to play to win, to live a life filled with kingdom values. And so we opt to play it safe. and we live our lives so as not to lose, and we end up focusing on the wrong things, and we don't focus on things that we have not tried or haven't done. We focus on things that we've done wrong. And our problem is fear, but I think behind that fear is an identity crisis. We fear that we don't have what it takes to stay married. We fear that we don't have what it takes to be single again, to forgive, to be a single mom or dad, to make an impact, to adopt a child, to serve our community, to start that nonprofit you've been thinking of forever. We think we don't have what it takes. We fear we don't, but it's not really a lack of bravery or talent. I think it's a lack of identity. Behind the fear is a lack of identity. And that's what I want to talk about today is, who are you? Who are you as an individual? But more importantly, who are you as a church? Who are we? I'm going to use the Exodus story as a backdrop today. Exodus, when you study the Old Testament, you ought to always study the book of Exodus and the book of Numbers right together, because they're parallel accounts with a lot of different information about what was going on during those years. The Exodus story, if you recall, focus is on God's deliverance of his people into a new life and a new land. You remember, they were slaves for generations, were they not? 400 years of slavery in Egypt. And God said to them, you're not really slaves, you're my people. And I'm going to do something about this. And so he breaks in on their lives, 400 years of slavery, breaks in on their lives with this guy named Moses. And suddenly, the old is over with and the new begins. They've been delivered out of slavery, but it's more than just a deliverance, a physical deliverance. There's the deliverance of their identity. They've been slaves all this time, and God says, no, you're not slaves, you're my people. And there's supposed to be a transformation of identity. You're my people, and I'm taking you to a new place that you're going to inhabit. And then when you get to the book of Numbers, chapter 13, they're on the edge. They're on the border of this new land. 12 guys are sent in to spy out the new land. You remember that? The new land, they find out, is really a new land, and it's filled with amazing stuff in there. And there's a new life that's ready to be lived, but not yet. You know why? Because in that new land, there was what? Still the presence of sin and oppression. I mean, it's not perfect. It's still kind of messed up in there, but yet that's the place that they're supposed to go and play to win. They're supposed to live a different kind of life in that place. So the 12 spies come back, and if you recall, Joshua and Caleb are the two guys who say, we should absolutely go in and do it. We should go and live in the midst of that sin and oppression. We should live like we are the people of God. The other 10, you remember what they said, huh? To them, it was kind of risky. Here's what they said in chapter 13. Verse 27, it says, we went into the land where you sent us, and yeah, it's a great land flowing milk and honey and all that stuff, but you know, the people that live there, they're pretty strong. And the cities are fortified and large, and we saw the descendants of all these other, and man, I tell you, it's just a mess. And Caleb, he quieted the people, and he said, we should by all means go in and live the life there. We should take possession of it, and we'll overcome it. We can do this. But the men who had gone up with him said, we're not able to go up, for the people are too strong for us. And so they gave out a report, a bad report. And they said, yeah, the land is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people are of giant size in there. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so were in their sight. You see what's happened here? We became like grasshoppers in whose sight? Our own sight. This is an identity issue. They're scared to death. You know what they're saying? We don't have what it takes to do what God's called us to do. I mean, he set us free. He's transforming us, and he's given us this place to go and live in the middle. I mean, it's ready. Not yet, but we can still go and do it. We're supposed to go and do it. And they're just like, well, we just can't really do this. And so all the congregation, they influenced them, and they were all upset about this whole thing. And they wept, and they cried. They grumbled against Moses. And they said, you know what? Now, our wives and kids are going to be killed over there. We should just go back to Egypt. And that's when Joshua and Caleb, they just jumped up and said, listen, we've got to do this thing. Just don't rebel against God and don't be afraid. I want to submit to you today that the problem was not just fear. It wasn't a lack of bravery or a lack of talent or a lack of opportunity. It was just a lack of identity. We're too small. We can't really do this. Now, I have to admit, God wasn't telling them, go in there and hold the fort, was he? He was telling them, go in there and take the land. He wasn't telling them, go in there and play not to lose. He was saying, go in there and play to win. This is the kingdom life. I mean, you're a new people. You're my people. And I'm sending you into this place that's ready, although not yet. but you still can go in there and you can do this thing. This isn't stay where you are. This is go and live a different life. But it seems unsafe. It seems irresponsible, a little bit insane, and it leaves them fearful. Now, those whose identity is rooted in slavery, they're the ones who are afraid. That's why I say it's, I think it's a lack of identity that's going on here. And it manifests in fear. Let's go back. But those whose identity is already being changed, we're God's people, there, that is manifesting in risk-taking. We should go in. Chapter 14, verse 24. My servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit and has followed me fully, I'm going to bring him in. I think it's a lack of identity. See, this Exodus narrative parallels the New Exodus narrative, does it not? I mean, the New Testament is all about a new Exodus, isn't it? I mean, we have been set free from slavery by who? By Jesus. We live in a new kingdom. We have a new identity, a new life, a new power. There's a new reality. The kingdom of God is here already, but not yet. Do we not live this life, this kingdom life, in the middle of sin and oppression? Of course we do. And sometimes Jesus has said to us, not sometimes, all he said, not hold the fort, but play to win. Live the life. Go and do that. In the midst of all the sin and oppression, challenge it. Not only challenge it, but change it. And that's where we start getting afraid. And again, I want to submit to you, I think we're afraid because we don't know who we are. You ask those 10 spies, ask those 12 spies who they are, and you get two different responses. 10 of them said one thing, 2 of them would say another. So let me ask you today, let's discuss this. How do you respond to the question, who are you? And before you answer it, let me create a framework in which you can answer it intelligently. When the ancients were asked this question, when the people from our Old Testament, as far back as we can go, when they were asked that question, their response would be shaped by 3 elements. Let's illustrate this. Adam and Eve. If you were to ask Adam and Eve who they were, let's just look at it like this. So you say, Adam, who are you? He would not have said, hey, I'm Adam. This is my girlfriend, Eve. He would not have said, I'm a man. She's a woman. Although that was true, right? He would not have said, I tend the animals. She tends the garden. He wouldn't have said anything like that. Adam's response from the beginning would have been something like this. Who am I? Well, let me tell you. He would have started with we, because why? They were one. She came from his side. She was one with him, one flesh. He would have started out with this. We're a we. We're a people. Me and her. That's it. Us. We are created in the image of God. He's the one who created us. He was in community before we ever came along, but now he has brought us, he's created us to be in community with him. We are his people created in his image, and we live in a certain place, Eden, where we have a job to do given to us by the one who created us. His identity, their identity would have been we are created in the image of God to rule and reign over this creation that God gave us. That would have been his identity. It would have been framed by 3 elements. There is a God, there is a people, and there is a place. Now, that's how ancient people always identified themselves. Think about Abram, Genesis chapter 12. Before God called Abram, if you would have asked Abram, you know, he's the guy who later becomes Abraham. We together on that? Okay. If you had asked Abram when he was living in Ur of the Chaldees, if you said, Abram, who are you? He would have said, I am a Chaldean. I belong to a tribe, a certain people, and we live in the land of the Chaldeans, Ur. All right? We are a tribe. We live in a place. And at that time, he would have said, and we have a God, because they did little g God. Everybody had a God, didn't they? Some of them had plenty of gods. But nonetheless, this is the way ancient people identified themselves. This is who our God is, and we are a tribe of people, and we live in a certain place. It was always in the framework of these 3 elements. That's how he would have answered the question. And then, when God, big G God, calls Abraham, now you ask Abraham, who are you? What's he going to say? He's going to say, well, the big G God has called me. I have a relationship with him, but not just me. It's me and my, what? My people. Why? Because he said, I'm calling you and I'm going to create a new people from you and I'm going to put you in a new, what? Land. It's always these three elements. Always. The conversation about identity is shaped by these three things: God, people, and a place. Now, ask any modern American Christian, who are you? And what is the first word out of their mouth? I. Why? Because it's shaped not by these three elements. It's shaped by our culture's highly valued individualism. Thanks to our culture, we are thinking, feeling, acting individuals to the point that even salvation is individual. Is it not? You might not agree with that. Let me show you. Because maybe just keep it on here. I believe that it is. Even salvation is individual. It's about us. It's for us, and it has nothing to do with these two elements in modern American Christianity. Here's what it is. Who are you? I'm a Christian. God and me are related. I've come into a personal relationship with God through Jesus. That's all fine, is it not? Okay, yeah. And it's all for what? Later on. And it has nothing to do with anybody else, or certainly no place. Individual. And that affects my life in really some really negative way. Spirituality becomes about me and my inner experience with God. Now let's throw in some other elements just for a second. I'm going to change this one to church, because church, it really isn't about a people, it's about a place. Now, if there's any connection between this individual me and church, you know what it's for? To improve this. It might be a place I go to, it might be a meeting I attend, it might be a Bible study, but it's still about what? It's not about a people, it's about me, because that's what salvation is. It's about me. This church will help me. If it helps me, I'll go. If it doesn't, I'll blow it off. But if it helps me improve my me and God sort of thing that prepares me for later on, well, then I'll go to church. This place, let's just call this land. That's maybe not a good one. Let's just put place. Here's a better one. Let's call this context. There is no context. The place that I live doesn't enter into this at all. Why? Because this is all about later on, and this is just temporary. It doesn't matter at all. So the focus then, these two really, a people doesn't come into play. A place doesn't come into play. The focus of my spiritual life is to not make huge mistakes, because I don't want to lose what? This. So I play not to lose. I don't want to make any big mistakes, because I know what the rules are. And if I lose this, I lose everything way out here. I got to be really careful, so I play not to lose. In fact, my focus is so on not losing, I become obsessive and I focus on things that I've done wrong, things that I do or could do to mess it up. I try to avoid all those things, and there's no thought of things that I never actually do. There's no thought of playing to win. And some people say, win what? My point exactly. Win what? There's nothing to win. I'm already saved. I'm holding the fort. And then you find yourself in the Vineyard Church over the last 6 years and 1 year here. And you find yourself being challenged to think. Oh, God forbid. Think? Yeah, think. Think and be and live differently. And things you hear challenge this whole thing, and it to the point that it sometimes rattles your cage. You go, I'm not sure. I'm gonna hold back and see where this thing's going. You're challenged to challenge this. Challenged to challenge and change the world's sin and oppression. You're challenged to play to win, to live a kingdom life with kingdom values in the middle of sin and oppression. You're challenged to do all those things and to make an impact, to make a difference, to dream with God. And not about your own personal individual dreams, but to dream his dreams and do something different there that will actually be risky. Trust God, obey God, risk and plant a church and see what happens. I mean, that's amazing risk, but you know what? It's all designed to what? To change the world. It's to go into that place and live a kingdom life and live it differently. And so it scares you to death. And you know what? I got to tell you, it's not because we lack bravery or talent or desire, but we lack identity. Well, I'm just one person. What can I do? What can I do? I mean, really, I'm alone. I'm fearful. And then when you hear a challenge like this, you know what? If you're stuck in this place, when you hear, we're so shaped by our culture. When you hear a challenge to live differently and risk stuff and live, I mean, really live kingdom values, not just post them on the refrigerator. You know what you hear? Oh, man, I was holding the fort. And now you're telling me I got to do something else. I have to achieve something. I got to find it somewhere within me. I got to achieve something. And as soon as we start talking about achievement and moving forward, we hear it as it's a competition because you look at people around you. Do we not do this? And we go, and we look at Christmas. Oh, well, he planted a church. What am I going to do? And so we get into this competition and we feel all challenged. Why? Because we're all individuals. And now we're in competition with each other, and we got to do something else. And it feels like this whole challenge thing is that now I've got to do something, but I'm so small, and I'm afraid. And I just want to suggest we still just don't know who we are because we're afraid. We don't have what it takes to do that. My suggestion here today is that if we change our identity, maybe we could lose the fear, because I believe this Old Testament Exodus narrative really does parallel the new one. We are no longer slaves. We're not who we used to be. We're God's people. And that's something really different. The kingdom is here already, but not yet. I admit that. I see it every day, and you do too. The kingdom is here, although not like it will be. God has broken in. He's broken in the person of Jesus. The old is gone. The new is coming, but it's also here now. And he's rescued not just us from sin. He's rescued our identity. Now look, let's draw this again. Well, let's just leave that one there. It'll work. With the resurrection of Jesus, everything changes. Everything. Let's add another word up here. We'll put God, but we'll also put gospel, the good news, God breaking in. With the resurrection of Jesus, here's what happens. Life with God, this is the good news. Life is possible with God. When? Now. Right now. A life of the kingdom is a reality. And it's not something waiting for us out here. With the resurrection, Jesus says now, this life can be lived right here, right now. It's a settled reality. We can live the life of the future in this present evil age. You agree with that? That's what the Bible teaches. That's what Jesus said. That's what the resurrection launched for human beings. He started a revolution with humanity, and he said, listen, the way it was is not the way it is with you. You can live this kingdom life, these kingdom values. You can really live this life of the future in the present. Not perfectly, but you can live it. That's a settled reality. And right now, because of the resurrection, you don't live this in this way alone. You have actually become a part of the people of God. You belong to a tribe. You're not alone. And you live in a very definite place. Where do you guys live? Earth? That's a good one. Yeah. I mean, we have a place. We have a land. We have a context in which this life gets lived out. See, there's no context here. This is just in my own head. There's no context. But I don't live in my head. I live in the world, a very real world. It's still got sin and oppression. But I live it with a people who have the same thing I have, which is a relationship with God. We are God's people, and we live in a place, and we can live this life in the here and now. We can really play to win, can we not? We're supposed to. That's what we've been brought into. And so all the elements are connected. We're supposed to be engaged in this context with people who maybe don't belong to the tribe that we belong to, maybe don't have anything with God, but we can live that life of the future right here, right now. And our identity needs to be framed. The conversation about who we are needs to be framed like this. We're not alone. We're not individuals. We are God's people, and we have something to do in a very specific place. And our life together challenges all the sin and the oppression of this world. Now, we will encounter serious, serious opposition, but we'll also find some gracious reception in this world, and that'll always be that way. We'll find some opposition because we're not supposed to hold the fort. We're supposed to change the world. But we'll also find gracious reception for the same reason, because the world needs to be changed and people want to be changed. We can now, because of the resurrection, we can actually begin to right the wrongs in the world. We can actually begin to live sacrificially. We can actually learn to love our enemies. We can actually fix what's broken. We can challenge injustice. That's what it means to play to win. But it seems so unsafe. I know, it is. It seems a little bit insane. Well, probably. It seems a little fearful. Why? Well, there's so much sin and oppression out there, we have to avoid it. No. You just missed it. There's sin and oppression out there that we are supposed to confront, to overthrow and challenge. In the love and the power of Christ, in the kingdom life. Who are you, really? You know, this is not a new problem. The Apostle Peter would later on have to write to some of his own disciples in 1 Peter 2. He would have to remind them who they were. He said, you are a chosen what? Yeah, people. You're a chosen people. You're a royal priesthood. You're set apart for God. Why? Because, well, God has brought you into his family. You're God's own possession. You once were not a people. I love that part. You once were not a people, but now you are. You've been brought into this family of God. And you are here to proclaim the excellencies of him who brought you into this thing. What does that mean? It means that we can live the life of the future now, right here. And he goes on to say in that verse that on account of us, people here will actually be drawn to his kingdom. We live lives that, right here in this context, and people will end up giving praise to God. Why? Because they see that there's something bigger, there's something better on account of us. We're not alone. We don't have to be afraid because we don't do this thing alone. You don't find any individualism in here. Not really. Front to back. I don't know where we got it from, but we sure got it, improved upon it, got really good at it, but we don't have to be afraid. You're not alone. Anybody, any of you guys afraid of being in the dark alone? Are you afraid of the dark? You can admit that. No, you're not afraid of the dark? Were you ever afraid of the dark? Okay, good. So if you're in the dark and you're totally alone, you feel this fear, do you feel any better if there's somebody next to you? Sure you do, even if you can't see them. And you probably heard this story before. It's a true story, but about a little boy who lost his mom at a very, she was pretty young. And you know, that would be pretty traumatic. And so the little boy's habit was to go to bed with his dad at night. And the lights would be off, and it would be dark, and he would be afraid. And he said to his dad one night, he said, Dad, is your face looking at me? And his dad said, yeah, my face is looking at you. And then you know what? Just peace, calm. Why? Because he wasn't alone. He wasn't alone. We're not alone. No need to be fearful. God, the good news of the gospel is that we've been rescued. And we've been brought into a family. And we live in a certain context where we have to play to win. But we do it together. Some people think their identity is permanent, you know. I would suggest that your identity can be changed. I even think this can be changed. I don't care if you've been a Christian 30 years and you've been living this thing, it's just me and God, and that can be changed. It can be changed when you realize this is true and you actually become intentional about putting yourself in this tribe, in this place. Your self-concept can change. Your individualness can be lost when you start having close relationships. Do you know one of the things, this is like deja vu for me. I mean, we even had windows like that in the back of the room. And then, but you know what happened in those early days? And I believe it's probably happening with you as well. But isn't it easier to find a sense of tribe? This is our tribe. Why, well, there's 30 of us, you know. We're in a living room. Yeah, I know. There's something really good about that. And I think it's important that you catch that early on, because that'll run with you a very long time. It'll help shape you as a people. But when you're in close relationships, what happens is you really do include other people into your identity. And what happens is you begin to take on their strengths, because they're yours. You're not alone. I mean, you just look around. You know each other. You know what your strengths and your weaknesses are. But you own that together. And suddenly what? You're not an individual who's got these weaknesses. No, you're a tribe. And you've got all these resources. And you all come together to make what? One. It's powerful. It's incredibly powerful. It's one of the biggest challenges of churches getting larger is maintaining that. And then sometimes it just sort of shoots and gets out of control to, and then now you're trying to find ways to bring people back to something like this so they can get that. Because otherwise you become a bunch of individuals, and that just does, it's not the kingdom. It doesn't work that way. You become an us. And you start living it out. You live out what? You live out the gospel with other people in a place. In a place. You play to win. You play to restore and reclaim all that was lost. And then you'll always be asking the question, but do we have what it takes? Do we have what it takes to play to win? Of course you do. Who's your daddy? No, I'm serious. He created it all, didn't he? And he said he's going to put it all back together, didn't he? He just said, I'm going to put it all back together with a people who live in the place that needs to be put together. That's our identity. That's our mission. That's who we are. You find that identity and you lose the fear. And you can do anything. I'm just, you know what, you guys are the top of my fan list. Crispin is and Dina, and just for doing this thing. It's going to work. Is it going to be easy? No. Will there be opposition? Yes. But will there be a gracious receptivity from a large part of the context in which you live? Absolutely. You just got to play to win. And to do that, you got to know who you are. Take a look at this picture here. Let's see if we got... Yeah. You recognize that face? Okay, so, yeah, if you don't know, it's Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga is... She is the megastar of megastars today. You might not like her music or her behavior, but nonetheless, she's a megastar. She is a bit eccentric, but there's a reason for that. There's a documentary coming out on her, and it should be out. I think it's in the month of August. And I read this by the folks who made the documentary, and they do some video of her, and I think it was Madison Square Garden. She was about to go on. She sold the Madison Square Garden out like five nights in a row in New York City or something like that. And just before taking the stage, they put the cameras on her for this documentary, and she had a meltdown, and she was just weeping. She was fearful. She was stressed out. She was worried. And you go like, really? A megastar? selling out Madison Square Garden five nights in a row, and you're nervous about getting on stage. I mean, what about the confidence and all the success that you've had? She was worried that she didn't have what it took. She actually said this. She said, "I have to get up every day and tell myself I'm a superstar. I have to tell myself I'm a superstar so I can get on the stage and give people what they want." She said, "But in my mind, I think I'm a loser. I still think I'm that misfit from high school." And she was a misfit in high school. Very talented, but misfit nonetheless. That's her identity. That's who she thinks she is. And I have to tell myself I'm a superstar. Her brain is locked in being a misfit and a loser. That's her identity. The address in her head is one she inherited. And I want to suggest to you, sometimes the address in our head, even as a Christian, is one that we inherited, and it's not the one God gave us. And until we start framing our identity in this context, we will always be a little bit playing not to lose. Because we don't even really know what it means to play to win. We don't even know what there is to win. We're still stuck kind of here. But your identity can change. She just doesn't really know who she is. Maybe one day she'll find out. Hers could change. I guess today my concern would be my identity. Can mine change? And is it changing? Well, it can. And it should. I think at this point, you know, there's so many things in planning a church. It's just hard. It's one of the hardest things in the world to do. It really is. The success rate in planting churches is not very high. I don't know what it is, but a lot more churches die than survive. This one is doing great. But it'll continue to progress as you learn this. Because this is what you're for. You know, it's easy to get distracted and say, well, you know, it's about our place and it's about getting this. All those things are very important, but that's, you know, this is really what it's about. At the end of the day, we could all do this. Even in Kenner, we could do this without a building. We don't want to try. But in reality, couldn't we? Yeah. Which would make it even more important that we really understand this. So, I'd like to just pray for you, if I could. Well, Lord, I don't think you've ever stopped doing this. I mean, from the first people you created, this is exactly what you did. You brought us all. You brought those first people into your tribe, and you gave them a context in which to live with you and with each other. And those things never diminished in importance, at least not to you. And God, what you've done in humanity through your Son Jesus is the same thing. And wherever we've missed that, and wherever folks in this room have missed that, God, I pray that we just get it. And that we start living within that framework of who we are and who you've called us to be, who you've made us to be. And my prayer for this group, Lord, for this church, is very simple. May they find you in each other. And in living this kingdom life together in this context, may they make you famous. May your kingdom come and your will be done in this part of the earth as it is in heaven. Why? Because you have a people right here. And so today, God, I just bless them and ask you to pour out your Spirit upon them and use them to further your kingdom. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Amen.